Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up and deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
You know that song that's part of our intro, Poker Face by Lady Gaga?
Mm-hmm.
It's now the number one song in Britain. And I think we should take credit since it's on this show every week.
I think so. She owes us something, I think.
People listening to the podcast, obviously in Britain.
What is that song?
What is that song that Paul and Dennis are using every week? And they're going out and buying it. So we'll expect a royalty check in the mail. Welcome to the Lumiere Plays Poker Room in downtown St. Louis. I'm Paul Harris. Dennis Phillips is here with me. A little bit later on, we'll introduce you to another St. Louisan who has made a lot of money in a tournament recently.
Yep.
A guy by the name of Pat Walsh,
mm-hmm.
who came in fifth at the LAPC, and we don't know when that's going to be on the WPT Tour.
Correct.
But we'll find out when Pat joins us here in a little while.
First televised final table, but not his last.
I think you're absolutely
very,
right about
very good
that.
Player.
So Pat will join us in a few minutes. But first, let's talk about your recent travels.
Mm-hmm.
Since we were last here, you have been to a WSOP World Series of Poker Circuit event at Caesars in Atlantic City, and you're just back from a Latin American Poker Tour event in Uruguay.
Yeah.
And by the way, congratulations on getting back from Uruguay.
It was interesting, yes. I basically got to test every door in the Uruguayan airport, I think. So, yeah, it was so much fun. Now, the flight there was delayed. It turned out to be 6 hours it was delayed there. Then they tried to book us. And, of course, spring break is ending down in Florida. So through Miami, getting a flight back was fun. I spent another 5.5 hours in the Miami airport.
In addition to 21 hours of travel.
Yeah, and then I had to actually fly over to Orlando to catch a flight from Orlando back up to St. Louis because everything from Miami straight was booked.
So all that said and done, was it worth it?
Yeah, actually it was fun, I have to admit. Finished 10th in the second chance down there. Met a guy who's become a very good friend of mine, Greg Raymer, down there. We sat around and talked, had a couple of meals together. Got to put faces to some of the voices that I have with Poker Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And I met some of the people down there. It was just a lot of fun.
You told me when we were talking about what we're going to get to on the show today to ask you about something that I've never heard of called the Brazilian Triple Twist. You said, ask me about this. It's a Uruguay story. We got to talk about it right at the top of the show. So, Dennis, what is the Brazilian Triple Twist?
Okay, well, this is a little bit complicated, and I thought it was fantastic. Young internet player. This guy is maybe 21, 22 years old. Actually did this in the second chance when we were down to about 15, 16 people left there.
Mm-hmm.
So bear with me while I try to explain this. When you're one removed from being under the gun, in other words, you have a big blind, another person, and then you. So you're two away from it. So you're not under the gun, but you're right there by it. You're sitting there with 10 blinds, basically. So you're short stacked. You're in trouble. If you wait much longer, you're going to be going through the blinds. The antes are large. You know, this is going to be a problem.
Yep.
What he does there, it's any two cards, ATC, all in. He doesn't even bother to look at them. He automatically shoves his 10 blinds in there right then.
He got to pretend to look at them.
Well, of course.
But it doesn't matter what he actually sees,
right?
Right,
right. It doesn't make any difference. It's a 2-7. He's going all in.
Okay.
So this is the first move of the triple. Push it in there. You're early. Everybody's looking at you. This is what goes through other players' mind. At least that's what I think on it. For him to push right there, he has to have a substantial hand. He's still got one free hand before the big blind, so he's got a chance to actually do something. He's not going to want to push it in with all these players to act behind him unless he has a premium hand.
Mm.
He did it. Everybody mucked, took down the pot.
So he takes in the small blind, the big blind, and the antes, which
right.
probably equal about a blind and a half. So he's got like three more big blinds, and so now
correct.
He's up to 13 big blinds.
Exactly. A little over 13 at this stage, in fact, is what he was with.
Okay.
It. All right. Next hand's dealt. Again, ATC. Any two cards.
He does it again?
Pushes it all in. Doesn't even have to look at him. Shoves. Right there. Under the gun. Just shoved. Everybody's looking at him. All right. Maybe he bluffed last time. There's no way in the world this guy is doing it back to back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shoves it all in there and waits. Worst case scenario, somebody wakes up with a hand and he looks down. He has a 5-3. He's still got a 30% chance probably to win the pot.
If he has two live cards.
Yeah, if he has two live cards. That's what, you know, so,
and by live cards, we mean two cards where the other person might have something like ace-queen or ace-king.
Correct.
So if he has 5-3, if he
yep.
catches a 5 or a 3, he's going to win the hand.
There you go.
Okay.
So he figures, worst case scenario, I got a 30% chance. I've got to do something to accumulate chips. I don't want to get below the 10X on it. So This is why I'm doing my Brazilian triple twist.
Okay.
Right. Push it out there again, and literally everybody folded again.
Did anybody even think about it, look at them, check them out?
Yeah, they did. I mean, there was a little bit of hesitation, a little bit. You know, people are wondering about it.
Are you at the table at this point?
I am at the table.
Are you at this point thinking to yourself, this guy's pulling something?
Well, not with a deuce nine. I really didn't care. All right, I have to admit.
You're not in a, nobody's in a situation like that to play any two cards against the shove.
Really. You need a premium hand. You need something. And that's why he has such fold equity. You've got to figure that 90-whatever percent of the time, they're going to fold their hands. Mm-hmm. And if you run into a premium hand, well, you run into a premium hand. That's the gamble he's taken.
All right, I think I know what's coming on the next hand, which will be the triple part of the triple twist. But before you get to that, let me ask you about his second shove. You're at the table there.
Yep.
You've now seen him do this twice in a row.
Yep.
And I don't know, are you in middle position or late position?
I'm about three beyond him, so I'm actually in closer to late position.
Okay.
And moving towards him.
All right, so you've got position on him. Not that that's going to matter because he's all in. What two cards would you have to look down at to play back at him? To
actually, my range was a little bit longer because I was also one of the shorter stacks. At that time, I'm not for sure what I had. Probably I had 12 or 13 big blinds is all I had.
Mm-hmm.
So if I think I can get in on a race, I'm going to do it. So some of the other guys would probably have to have a premium hand. I'm telling you, I have ace-jack, ace-queen, ace-king. I'm in.
Middle pair.
Probably would still throw away a small pair, a 2-3-4 or something like that. But other than that, yeah, anything 6 or above pairs, I'm in. I would even consider some of those danger hands that I call them. Suited queen-jack, king-queen offsuit, maybe even a jack-10. I'd think about it. I'd hate to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But at that stage, you got to figure, let's go for it.
When you're getting short, you're going to have to make some moves yourself.
Exactly.
The problem for you at the table is while you need to make some moves, there's a guy taking your moves away.
Yeah, he's not giving me any options.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, but I would be one of the people at the table that he would be a little more afraid of.
Okay.
You're absolutely right. Anyhow, I'll fold to him. He picks it up. Now he's up to about 17 big blinds because he's picked up the antes, he's picked up the small blind, he's picked up the big blind, the whole bit like that. Here comes again. He's the big blind. And he has to complete his triple twist.
Okay, but before he can go all in, everybody else at the table
Correct.
Has to act.
And this is what happens. A gentleman to my right, between me and him, makes a 3X raise. Substantial raise.
Okay.
All righty. I folded, guy to my left. Smooth calls him.
All righty. Okay.
Back to him on the big blind. Small blind folds.
All righty. Uh-huh.
Now, he's up to about 17 big blinds. This is a 3X raise. So his push is a substantial raise, and he does it. All in again, third time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, who in their right mind is going to push all in three times with any two cards?
Yeah.
Well, he is. And the guy goes into the tank. Now, this is also what you call a classic squeeze play.
The original raiser goes into the tank, meaning he thinks about this. And
yeah, he does. But he's got a smooth call behind him who could have a monster hand. He has this guy who's now gone in for a third time in a row. Nobody's going to go in the third time without a substantial hand. You've got to put him on a hand.
Even if he was bluffing the other two times.
Even
certainly.
If he was, absolutely. You know, there you go.
That's
so
the thinking.
That is it. So he actually folds, and later he said he had ace-jack is what he did, and he folded, which ace-jack at that position I would fold too. Goes back to the other guy who smooth called. He has pocket nines. Okay, in my position, I'm in with pocket nines.
Okay.
He had more chips, though. He had 24, 25, 26 big blinds. This was going to cripple him to call it. He would be down to less than 10 big blinds.
Call and lose.
To call and lose. So that's his tournament life.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got to be thinking, I only have a 3X in. Granted, there's equity in the pot with the other two people being in there. But the only thing I can beat here is a smaller pair. If he has ace-king, ace-queen, whatever, he has anything like that, you know, we're basically racing.
Any two over cards. I mean, yeah. If you've got a pair of nines and the other guy's got ace-10.
There you go. Yeah. So you're looking at being maybe a 54 or 46 favorite
mm-hmm.
at best.
Mm-hmm.
If he has an over pair, you're totally dominated. If he has an under pair, you dominate him. But, you know, again, for him to push there with a razor and a limper, you would assume he has better than pocket sixes or pocket sevens.
Mm-hmm.
So, boom. You know, the only thing hands you can hope him to have is pocket eights almost.
Yeah.
Guy folded. He took it down.
So the guy went all in three times in a row.
Yep.
Took it down each time.
Yep.
Now he's gotten more than just 20 or 21 blinds. He's probably up to
going.
Like 25 blinds.
28 is what he ended up almost. By the time you figure the small blind, you figure the antes, and you figure a 3X and a 3X on it, and
yeah.
He started out a little over 18.
And so now this guy who was short stacked is now kind of out of the danger zone.
That's exactly it. And he has a whole round to go before he's blinded again.
Nice.
He's back in the tournament.
Nice. And how did he end up?
Finished sixth in the tournament.
He finished sixth in the tournament.
Yeah.
After that move.
Yeah.
Now, is that something that you expect to see more and more from, as you say, these young, aggressive internet players?
You're seeing an awful lot more of the probability plays, of the shove play, where the other guy has fold equity.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if everybody, you know, folds around to the small blind, basically they're going to shove with almost any two cards, because the odds are 90% of the time big blind's going to fold.
Now, did you, on a break, go talk to this guy and ask him, just tell me what you had there?
I did, because when he did it, he looked over to the crowd and said, triple, and held his thumbs up, and I'm going, what the hell? Type deal.
Yeah.
I had to find out.
Uh-huh.
Friendly guy, nice guy. We talked to him for a while, and he said that he had on the third hand that he did look for sure. He didn't tell me what was the first two. He had a jack seven.
And the guy with nines.
There you go.
Had him pretty much dominated.
Yep.
Yeah.
The guy with ace jack really had him dominated.
Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. That's a play that I think you'll see a lot more people doing.
You're seeing more and more of that aggressive play. Now, you remember 20 years ago, somebody does a raise and then a re-raise pre-flop. That second re-raise, everybody said, well, that's aces or kings.
Yeah.
It's got to be
in. Right.
Now, it's four or five of
hearts. Yeah.
What the heck?
All right, now let's back up for just a second to the third one of those chances there where that guy, the triple twist guy, is in the big blind.
Yep.
And he's expecting to be able to do his triple twist.
Yep.
The first guy raises, the guy
who
we know has ace jack. He raises it to three times the big blind.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy on your left has a pair of nines.
Yep.
Even though he's got enough chips to really play there, should he be doing something else besides just smooth calling there? If you were in his situation, would you have smooth called, or do you try to raise to find out where you are? Because you always, now this kid has shown himself to be a little bit of a threat with his all-in moves. Mm-hmm. I'd be worried about that triple twist move.
Actually, you probably aren't. You're just assuming a third time the guy's got chips. He's probably not going to be doing anything at this time.
Mm.
You worry more about the guy that made the initial 3X.
Mm-hmm.
And you have position on it. So you're not really closing the betting, but there's a good chance you're closing the betting on it. And then you get to see three free cards. So, yeah, I probably would. I had enough. If I got 28 big blinds, it's costing me three there. You do one of two things on it. You either call or you go ahead and push out there. Think of it as, now look at this. Think of it, do the math. You've got to make a 3X. For you to come back over the top, you've got to make at least a 7 to 8X minimum.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a third of your chips out there in it.
Mm-hmm.
The other guy, I don't remember what exactly he had, but you may be pinned into the hand then,
mm-hmm.
all in. Now, I think I would smooth call there and see the three cards. Now, even if it comes high cards, I may be pushing afterwards, depending on the read I get on the other player, but I don't think that's a bad call, to smooth call there, and to see the three cards.
I think it'll be great if in all the tournaments that you're playing, and you'll be playing a lot more over the next few months to get ready for the main event at the World Series of Poker and other things that you're going to do, if you run into this kid again at a table. He'll remember you, and maybe he won't try it again if you're at the table, or maybe you'll get to do it to him first.
Right.
We're at the Lumiere Place Poker Room. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips, and our show tonight is brought to you in part by PokerStars, the site where Dennis is a proud member of Team PokerStars Pro.
Yes, PokerStars. I was down in Uruguay at the LAPT, which is sponsored by PokerStars. Love the place down there on it. PokerStars, it's a place you need to go. If you're any kind of an online player, or if you want to learn how to be an online player, PokerStars is the place you need to go. They have more tournaments there. They have more variety of games there. They are open 24 hours a day. It is the site to be. There is always a seat open at PokerStars.net. Be sure you delve in there at the world's largest poker room, and maybe you'll find the poker star in you. Again, PokerStars.net, the place to play.
We're back with more of the Lumiere Plays Final Table right after this on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS at KFNS.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Whether you play poker in a home game, a cash game in a casino, or online, this is the show for you. It's the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
And joining us here in the Lumiere Place Poker Room is a guy who I've been playing poker with here in St. Louis for several years by the name of Pat Walsh. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How you doing, Pat?
Real good.
Yeah, Pat's taking a little money from me, too, here. So.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think we've all traded off some chips over the years. So.
I have, you know, it's funny because when people ask me how I got to know Dennis, I say I saw Dennis playing poker starting about 4 or 5 years ago. Here in the St. Louis poker rooms and playing a lot of tournaments and just getting better and better and better as he went along, and I knew this was a guy to keep an eye on.
Sure.
And I will say that even before I was saying that about Dennis, I thought that about you because you and I used to play in the old Limit Hold'em game here,
yeah,
the 2040 game,
yeah,
for several years,
yeah.
And then you switched to not only no Limit Hold'em as we did, as most of us did, but you also became a pretty good Pot Limit Omaha player.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's been a big game here in the Midwest and the South for quite a while. So, I mean, what I mainly did is start playing limit poker. And then, I mean, the closest place from here that plays bigger games was obviously Tunica.
Mm-hmm.
So going down south and playing that game was really big there. And then it kind of caught on here. So
you're going to be a regular here Tuesday nights with us over there at the 510 after this is over. And that's always a lot of fun.
What was ironic to me was as good a PLO player as you became, it took you going back to No Limit Hold'em to get a big tournament finish.
Yeah.
Pat just came in fifth place at the L.A. Poker Classic out at the Commerce Casino in Los Angeles just a few weeks ago and won $310,000 for that.
Yeah, $310,000.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And guys got to realize this is one of their premier tournaments. There was everybody who's anybody out there at that tournament. I guarantee that when you're going through it, you had to sit down with some of the big names around there at your table or around you.
Who did you play with?
Oh, man, most of the big names. Phil Ivey was at my table, I think the second or third day. Obviously, Chris Ferguson was another name that made it to the final table. It seemed like everywhere I turned around, there were probably half the people at the table had some sort of logo from, you know, Full Tilt or whatever. So and that goes to show that there was... It was a big turnout. Yeah, Poker Stars. And yeah, obviously Poker Stars. But it was I'd probably say half the field was professionals. And
oh, easily, I think, yeah.
How was it for you playing against guys like that?
I think I've gotten used to it. I played with a little bit of them here and there, different tournaments. So you just got to block the fact that they're famous or whatever it may be out of your head and... I mean, you know, sit down and play. It's just, it's just you and them. You just got to look at them like they're anybody else.
Tell us about the experience of being on TV, because while Dennis made it to the final table of the World Series of Poker, only a couple of guys from St. Louis. I mean, St. Louis has been very, very well represented.
Very, you know, well represented.
Tim Vance won a big European event.
That's the Copenhagen one.
A friend of ours named Pat McMillan won a PLO event out at the LAPC. Kyle Koechner made a couple of final tables at the WSOP last summer. So St. Louis has taken a lot of money out of the tournament poker community.
We're doing well out there, absolutely.
Yeah.
And Pat's the latest to do that. But you're the only one I know of that's going to be at a final table on a WPT event. Tell us what that's like to be in that arena setting.
I tell you what, everything happened so fast. We got down to the final six players, I want to say at probably 3 in the morning, and then had to be back... the very next day at noon to start preparing for the final table. So we really only had 8 hours from the point when you find out that you made the final table to where everything actually starts going. And, I mean, right after we got down to the final six, your agents came into the room, so you're talking to agents, you're talking to different website companies that might want you to wear a logo. So there's a lot of distractions between now and then. You really don't have a whole lot of time to think about it.
Did you get any time to sleep?
A few hours, but I mean, again, then you get back and you're you know, sending out text messages and responding to people, and then you have to show up the next day at noon, and you got to go through a bunch of interviews and fill out paperwork. So before I knew it, it's boom, the cameras are on, and you know.
It's actually almost a little bit of a blessing. You don't have time to sit and think and stew about it. When you do get back to the room, you try to get some sleep and everything, and then the next morning they keep you running.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
Is it hard to fall asleep knowing you're going to have to go to that final table the next day?
It is, but I was so exhausted. I mean, we've been playing for 5 days straight, 12 and 15-hour days sometimes.
Yeah.
It's you definitely have some jitters.
Yeah.
I'd be lying if I said you didn't, but you know, I found a way to get a few hours sleep, and then you get up and you're on the go from that point. So.
You mentioned that Chris Jesus Ferguson, was at that final table with you. Any other people who you knew or had played with before?
I played cash games with one other guy that was there, but the other three people, actually one of the other guys had won a WPT event.
Oh.
Chris Caragulian, I think his name was.
Mm-hmm.
He'd won one back in, I want to say, 04 or 03. Mm-hmm. I think he's from L.A., so him and then the other two were internet younger kids that had started on the internet a few years ago, and they've been playing the tournament scene. And
well, and you can't discount the internet guys anymore.
Right.
The gentleman from Brazil was an internet player with his Brazilian deal that we did just talk about.
So. And where were you in chip stack when you got to the final table?
I was a little below average, and what they originally said is they might move the blinds down because the average chip stack, I want to say, probably had 20 big blinds, which is kind of short. I mean, if you're going to play a hand, you're forced to push, and there's not a whole lot of, you know, maneuverability at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then for some reason they decided to keep the blinds the same. So it was kind of a push or hold type of final table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every poker player who's ever played an event knows the hand that eliminated them. And I know you've gone over it 1,000 times. Before you tell us that one, you must have had a couple of hands that were real good for you. Did you have any monsters or where you made a good decision or somebody else made a bad play?
No, there wasn't anything real tough. I got short stacked kind of early just from raising a couple pots and trying to pick up the blinds, and for whatever reason didn't work out. So then I picked up a pair of 10s. I think I was in the cutoff seat or right on the button, and I raised, and another guy moved all in. He had ace-jack, and I had 2-10, so I doubled up there. And then I doubled up again. This was a smaller double up. I had an ace-queen. The other guy had an ace-jack.
Mm-hmm.
And then I lost two consecutive hands to put me out.
Yeah, I was watching it online, and I saw you. Oh, look at this. He's making a move. He's moving up. You know, we only see the chip stack numbers. We're not seeing live play-by-play.
Yeah.
And I say, oh, look at this. Pat's moving up. This is fantastic. And then all of a sudden, where's Pat?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was back in the hotel at that point.
What happened?
Well, the previous hand, the two kids on my left were the internet kids, which played pretty aggressive. They were raising our blinds pretty much the whole tournament. And a lot of that probably won't see on television because they'll only show, I'm sure, the big hands.
Right.
You know, but I wasn't getting any hands in my blinds. So the guy raised on the button again. I look down. I have a king jack. This is the second to last hand that put me out. And I decided to just play a small pot. And he had a king 10, so I was in real good shape, but he flopped a 10. So he ended up winning that hand. You know, we went down to I had two over cards, and I think in a straight draw, and I ended up missing. And then the very next hand, the same guy raises my blind again. I look down, and I have an ace. I have an ace deuce, which is kind of a marginal hand, but, you know, if you're playing it up against someone that's raising the blind pretty much every time, there's a good chance I'd have the best hand there. So
he could have a wide range of cards there.
Yeah, he could have, you know, 7-8 of clubs. You know, he was, you know, capable of playing a lot of hands in that spot. So I made a re-raise, and I made a big enough re-raise I wanted him to know that I was committed to the hand,
mm-hmm.
Hoping he would fold. And, of course, he moved all in, and I was kind of priced in. He had an ace-jack, so he had an ace with a bigger kicker.
Yeah.
And his hand ended up holding up.
Or blanked off for you.
Yeah. So, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the internet guys, when they push every now and then, they still have a hand. You could have easily done that also with a king nine or
yeah.
who knows what. Then
yeah.
he's got fold equity. So the move you made, there's no problem with it. You just ran into a bigger hand.
Yeah, and again, the hand that we played right before that was fresh in my mind, where he raised with a king 10,
yeah.
and I have a king jack. So I'm in real good shape there, but then I decided to play it passively and just, you know, and then I ended up getting burned.
Mm.
So the following round, I played it a little more aggressive, and, you know, he had the bigger hand, so.
Yeah. So at that point, once you're out, are you escorted from the arena and you're done, or do they make you stick around and talk to Vince Van Patten against your
No, unfortunately. They just do a small interview with you right when you leave the final table, and then they take you to the cage and do the taxes, of course, and then
the taxes are always first.
Yeah, and then they
talk to this extremely hot woman. I can't remember the name of the woman who's the hostess on that show now, but she's there. You get to talk to her for that quick little interview, and then the government would like to talk to you now.
Yeah, unfortunately, I actually talked to someone else who interviewed me.
Oh,
and then then they take the taxes out. So you have three depressing things that happen right in a row there. But
so where do you go from here? I know you've been playing in the 5-10 game here at Lumiere with us on Tuesday nights, and I've seen you in some other games around town. What are you up to for in the next couple of months?
Probably Vegas. Vegas has got a lot going on in April and a lot in June, obviously, with the World Series being out there. So I'll go out there and play the cash games for sure. I maybe dabble around in a few tournaments here and there. Just kind of see what
I pretty much guarantee we're going to see Pat on TV more than just this one time.
Yeah,
it's a good player. It's developing more. He's going to be around for a while.
Unless you decide to just be a cash game specialist, I would not be surprised to see you on TV again.
I hope you're both right.
just don't pick on me.
Maybe we'll all be there.
There you go. That'll work.
That'll be nice. That'll be nice.
Okay.
Well, congratulations, Pat.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And we'll see you in the big game here a little bit later on.
Okay. Sounds good.
Pat Walsh, St. Louisan, who came in fifth at the LAPC just a few weeks ago, joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Riddell Remodeling, Ron Riddell's company in Collinsville, Illinois, that serves the Metro East as your full-service remodel company. If you're looking to add something on to your home, if you're looking for a new kitchen, if you're looking to redo your bathroom, or if that basement has finally gotten so depressing you've got to change it, maybe make it a place for you to entertain people. Maybe the kids are getting older and they need a room to play in. Maybe relatives come and stay with you and they're tired of sleeping on the couch or the floor and you want to turn it into a bedroom. Whatever it is, Riddell Remodeling can do that for you. Here's a website you should check out. It's athomewithron.com. Ron Riddell's company, Riddell Remodeling, is online at athomewithron.com. Have real professionals do that remodeling job for you. An award-winning remodeling company is Riddell Remodeling, athomewithron.com. We're back in a moment at the Lumiere Place Final Table with a guy who made it really deep in the World Series of Poker main event just a couple of years ago. His name is Bernard Lee, and he's next here at the Lumiere Place Final Table.
In just two short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with 2-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 in Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
It's Poker on your radio. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS. Now, here are two guys giving off reverse tells and trying to take your stack, Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by Poker Stars. That's where Dennis Phillips plays and is a member of Team Poker Stars Pro.
Absolutely, a proud member of it. Poker Stars is the largest in the world. It's the only place that you can go 24 hours a day, play any level game, any type of game, anything you want there at all. The largest poker room in the world, PokerStars.net. I play there all the time. I sponsor it. I proudly wear their logo on my shirt. I just got back from Uruguay, where I had gone at their request, and I'll be going to several more of those. I'll be in Argentina next month at their request. So if you want to play poker, if you want to learn, if you want to develop your game, if you want to play against me, come on down, as they say, PokerStars.net.
And by the way, we're getting emails from people on a regular basis who were in our free roll a few weeks ago wondering when we're going to do another one. We don't have a date lined up, but we're working on it. I think that's really all we can say right now.
And again, thanks to Poker Stars for helping us put that on.
Absolutely. So, a quick reminder that this show, the Lumiere Place Final Table, is moving back 1 hour, not next week, but the following week. Beginning in April, this show will air live at 7 o'clock Tuesday nights on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS, and, of course, the streaming audio on KFNS.com. So that's 2 weeks from tonight. The Lumiere Place Final Table moves to 7 o'clock on Tuesday nights. Now let's meet our guest this evening.
Yeah, Bernard Lee is joining us. Bernard's developed into a very good friend of mine. I've talked to him down at the PCA and several other ones. To give you a little quick background, he finished 13th in the 05 World Series of Poker, and he's catapulted that into basically a career. This gentleman who won three different titles in three consecutive years. He has become known not only as a poker player, which he is a very, very good one, but he writes regularly for the Boston Herald. He writes regularly for ESPN now. He has his own weekly radio show. He has his own teaching academy that he does. He's written his own book. Basically, this guy is covering all the bases. He's a very, very good guy, and he's got the type of values that we all love. A gentleman at the table and a good friend of mine. This is Bernard Lee. Bernard, are you there?
Yep. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, not a problem. All right. How's everything going out there?
Well, probably a little colder up here in New England than it is down there, but spring's coming. The golf clubs are out.
By the way, Dennis mentioned that you won three titles back-to-back. Those were WPT World Poker Finals at Foxwoods, which I guess since you're in Boston is kind of your home casino, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really my backyard. I'm very fortunate. Foxwoods is kind of one of those places where I kind of grew up playing. They opened up in 92, and I played my first game there, cash game. I played my first tournament there, my first main event, and then I've been very fortunate. 06, I won the 5,000 event, 07, the 2,000, and then just won the 600 modified shootout last year. So it's I really feel like it's home, and I'm looking forward with the Foxwoods Poker Classic is starting up right now, so I'm looking forward to going back and hopefully doing some more damage over there.
Well, you've obviously cemented yourself as a player in the thing, but I love what else you've done with it and how you've developed this into a career, how you've gone into the educational part of it, into the tutoring part of it, into the book writing part of it. So, you know, this is just, you know, it's a way you should do it. On it, and
well,
you know.
I've been very, very fortunate, and I guess my better half or better three quarters helped in that scenario. Is where my wife, you know, I had worked in the business world for similar to you, Dennis, for a long time. I was out there for about 12 years, nine of which after I got my MBA, and my wife basically said, you know, we're not giving this up just so you can live a dream of poker, and asked me, listen, if you really want to do this, you're going to have to bring in some consistent income. And at the time, I was only writing for the Boston Herald. And it was a two-year journey down the whole path, but I write for the Herald, I write for ESPN. As you said, I have my own radio show. I just finished it a couple hours ago. We had Vanessa on, Vanessa Russo. I teach for the World Series Academy, that teaching. I do have some private students as well, and then ended up writing a book, and I've done some commentary work. So, yeah, it just ends up becoming a career of all the stuff. And so not only am I a player, for better or worse, but I end up becoming a media personality. And it's been a great ride. I mean, the fact that I my whole world revolves around poker is pretty amazing.
Bernard, when you're teaching, you must have a lot of people who come up to you and say that they themselves want to give up their life and become poker professionals. What do you tell them?
Well, it's twofold. If it's a young person, especially someone who's played a lot on the internet, and I've gotten a lot of them come up to me and say, you know, Mr. Lee or Bernard, you know, I what would be your advice be? And amazingly, my advice always is get a job. And they always look at me and say, wait a second. I just told you I want to be a professional poker player. I said, I understand, and you might not like my answer, but I say get a job. And the reason being is that when you work 40, 50, 60 hours a week and you get a paycheck, and, you know, let's just argue that making math easy, they make $50,000 a year and they're making basically $1,000 a week. Well, after they get their taxes taken out and their Social Security and blah, 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 and they take home a check, well, they're going to look down and be like, wow, I really had to work hard for this money. Well, the next time they take home a check of $6,000 from a tournament, maybe they'll appreciate it a little bit more than just saying, oh, I just won $6,000. So I definitely tell a lot of young kids that they need to appreciate the money so that they can keep their bankroll, and then also, in addition to that, be able to not risk or throw away their money. For other people who have been working for a long time, I tell them, although it seems like a lot of fun, it definitely is a grind, and it is a very expensive career. It's one of the few careers where you have to put out money just to make money.
Yeah. It's also one of the few careers where you can lose your paycheck.
Yeah, absolutely. You can. There have been, unfortunately, this year specifically, there have been many times where I've come home where, you know, you quote unquote worked and then you lost money. So that's not a really good thing. When you're coming home with checks, that's always a good thing. But like I said, a lot of people I don't think realize the math of the expense part of it. They only see the revenue part of it. When they see Dennis bringing home $4 million, you know, all these millions of dollars, Peter Eastgate bringing home $9.1 million, they say, I want that. Well, they don't realize that it's six figures minimum to play on tour on a regular basis, not just in buying in events, but, you know, you got hotel bills, you got airfare bills,
exactly.
You got food bills. People don't realize how much you spend just on that alone. So I try to bring them to reality a little bit, and I've definitely had a couple people who wanted to be pro, and after I explained to them just how much it would cost for 6 months, they went, really? That much?
Yep.
Yes, that much.
My advice to them would be similar to yours, and I think they need to keep a journal, and it has to be a true journal. In
right.
that journal, you put down the hotel bill, you put down the food it cost, you put down the airline flight, and you figure out exactly what you are making at this. Because
yep.
that can eat into
Absolutely.
Any kind of a profit, a tremendous amount. So.
Well, I think also, you know, the other thing is that a lot of people look at it in the sense of, I want to walk in and I want to play a $10,000 event. I want to play the main event. And I have a lot of students that have come up to me and says, you know, my goal this year is to play in the main event. And I asked them, I said, so what other events have you played in? They go, I've never played in a big event. I said, then why is the main event your first goal? And they said, because I want to play in the big one. And I really, really tell a lot of people, listen, you really have to cut your teeth, and you have to really work hard at the smaller events. I mean, Dennis, I'm sure this is how you started out, and this is definitely how I started. I played in the first World Series circuit event ever in 05. It was in Atlantic City. I still remember 600-plus people online. There was alternates. They never expected it. And, I mean, $500 was a huge amount of money back then. I still am amazed that you would put down that kind of money. And until you're successful at those levels and or that you possibly could satellite into a $10,000 event, there's no reason that you should be starting out at those events. Poker is here to stay. You'll always have a $10,000 event to play in. Try your luck at the lower-level events. And if you are skillful enough to cash and do well, then slowly start moving up. It's like someone saying, I want to play poker. I want to go on high-stakes poker right now. You would never do that. But that's what everyone thinks. Oh, I'm just going to buy him for the $10,000 event. Oh, well, why don't you just sit down with Daniel Negreanu and Doyle Brunson and all the guys on high-stakes poker, and why don't you play in a cash game for $500,000? Well, I wouldn't do that. Well, that's the equivalent. That really is. And I don't think you ever want to do that.
Now, that being said, Bernard, I want to ask you about a question. We got an email, and by the way, the address for the show is DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. A listener named Matt, who's from Springfield, Illinois, who has played with Dennis in a couple of events and was actually at the Cardinals game where you threw out the first pitch. He says, I've been playing poker for about 3 years, but I recently won a WSOP main event satellite for $11,000, which includes a $10,000 seat in the main event. I know this is how you got in there last year, Dennis, but I have a dilemma. I love poker and I love to compete, but I don't make a ton of money at my current job. I'm not sure if I should have the Rio sell the seat or if I should go and take the time to go play in that event. What do you think?
Well, I would venture to say that based off of his immediate question and his immediate point is I would sell the seat if I was him. And the reason why I'm saying that is you don't hear in his question and his quote-unquote voice, for lack of a better phrase, in this situation, that it has always been a dream of mine. I can't wait to play. What is your advice on what I want to do? His is, I don't make a lot of money. This is a lot of money to put down. If I could take the $11,000, I would love it. Well, if it's not your lifetime dream, yes, it's something I would like to do, but it's not. And $11,000 is worth a lot of money to you. Well, first and foremost, you're going to have to get through 90% of the field to get any of that back. The odds of that happening, well, just by pure math, is 10%. So why would you risk $11,000 that you feel is very, very valuable to your bank, bankroll, and or savings for a 10% chance of making some of that back, and, of course, the very minimal chance that you have a shot to get so deep that you can 10x or 100x that money. So my personal advice is based off of what I'm hearing in that email is if you can get the money, take it.
What do you say, Dennis?
Well, I've got the same advice for a little bit different reason on it. I don't hear any confidence in there. The guy sounds like he's wanting a justification for taking the money instead of the seat, which if you don't have the confidence going out there, if you don't feel good enough about your game, and again, he's only been playing for about 3 years, I would rather take that money. I'd rather invest it in, you know, I don't know what percentage, maybe buy into a couple of $500 satellite events.
Absolutely.
Buy into, go to Tunica and play something there. You know, make it a nice trip out of it and still have 70, 80% of it left in your bankroll.
And by the way, be able to brag about the fact that you bought in for $200, which is what
you did
last year.
Absolutely.
You bought in for $200 and you turned it into 11 grand.
Absolutely.
That's the kind of return any poker player would be proud of.
Yeah. As Bernard
and
said.
What I would argue is take $10,000, put it away, but take $1,000 and do play money and maybe try to win another seat and then go.
Sure.
You know,
yeah,
I mean, just like Dennis said, listen, take this money and try to parlay it into something bigger in the sense of, well, $11,000 for one event or $11,000 over seven events, you know, something like that. So you have seven shots at it. Yeah, it's not for $9.1 million, but listen, I'm sure that someone wins a preliminary event like I have in the past, and to take a home six figures, you're not going to be upset about that.
All right. Well, I think it's very, very wise, sage advice from Bernard Lee here. One quick thing. I know you've been getting more of a commentator. You've got a new book out in that. What's the future hold for Bernard Lee here?
Well, I think I look at it in kind of three realms. One, first and foremost, as a lot of people remember me from 05 when I had the pictures of my kids, my biggest thing is to take care of my family, and I like to spend as much time with my family as possible, which is hard when you have to go away, but obviously try to be the best father, husband, friend I can to be my family. That's number one in my priority list. I would say from there, as a poker player, to continue to improve. You know, I've been very fortunate to have a winning year ever since 05 and not look back, and now be a career, and in all honesty, I want a bracelet. That's the number one goal. I want a bracelet. I want a WPT title. That's
you know, what
I have
a guy
want.
Who might be. I have a guy here who'll sell you a seat.
There you go.
Well, I'm not worried about getting my seat and/or paying for it. I just really want to get, you know, that ultimate bracelet. You know, I got real close in 05, similar to Dennis, and last year I got 13th, and the year Joe Hashim won, and I'd love to take home a title in any preliminary event or a WPT main event or something along those lines. But just to continue to improve and obviously keep going from there. And then the media world, just continue. I've been very fortunate to do the writing aspect. The radio show is about to hit its second anniversary. We're very fortunate. You can hear us on Rounders Radio every Tuesday. We're on Tuesday as well, earlier, 5 o'clock Eastern. And then doing a lot of TV commentating, and there's a lot of TV stuff in the works that I've just been offered a couple things. So I just want to continue doing all that because all of this put together allows me to stay in the business and, you know, really talk about a topic that is just absolutely amazing that I really talk about poker and play poker for a living. I love it.
Well, Bernard, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks so much for your time.
Not a problem. Thanks very much. I appreciate it for having me. And, Dennis, I'll see you soon.
Absolutely. We will be at tournaments together. This is Bernard Lee, a gentleman and a scholar. Absolutely.
You can find his Bernard Lee Poker Show on the air in Boston and also on Rounders Radio.
Yeah, BernardLeePoker.com if you want to look him up.
There you go. We'll take a break here and come back in a moment with our poker coach. That's Joe McGowan, who's got some great tips on you for you regarding when you should and when you shouldn't show your cards in a hand. All that coming up here in moments on the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Paul Harris and St. Louis's own poker millionaire, Dennis Phillips, on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Ray, what do you want to buy?
Hey, Susie, thank you so much for taking my call. Love the show. My wife and I watch your show all the time.
Thank you, Ray. You're doing a great job out there for us. So I have a feeling when somebody butters me up as much as you're buttering me up right now, you really want to ask me about something that you already have a feeling I'm going to deny you for. What is it?
Well, I'm hoping you're not going to deny this. It's been a passion of mine, a dream of mine to actually play in the 2009 World Series of Poker in Las Vegas. My wife wanted me to call in to see if I would be able to afford to, you know, to do this, and I'm hoping that you do approve it for me. I do play with my brothers and friends on a weekly basis. I'm pretty good at playing poker. I've played a lot of tournaments in the local area. I've done really well. So I think it's a great investment for me, Susan.
$10,000. Listen, this is a really big gamble, if you ask me. $10,000 to go blow it on a poker game, boyfriend. Show me the money.
Well, I'm going to show you the money, Susie. Take home is $5,500 a month.
That's not much money. Go on.
I have a $140,000 loan on my home. It's a 30-year fix at 5.75% interest.
Yeah.
I have $240,000 in savings and $180,000 in retirement.
And you're 43 years of age.
43 years of age.
You have no credit card debt.
Absolutely no credit
card debt. No car loan debt. This is something you have wanted to do forever.
Forever.
And your wife is okay with it.
My wife is the one that wanted me to call the show and ask for your permission to play the World Series of Poker.
That's because she knew what I was going to say to you.
What are you going to say to me?
All right, are you sitting down?
I'm standing, actually.
You're standing because you're going to fall down when I tell you this.
Uh-oh.
You have been
approved.
All right, I cannot believe I am approving somebody to go waste $10,000 playing poker, but then you never do know, do you? You never do know, but he can afford to lose it. Okay, what are you going to do?
Susie Orman disagreeing with the advice that you and Bernard Lee just gave a few minutes ago to one of our emailers. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips. We're live in the Lumiere Place Poker Room in downtown St. Louis and joined now by the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Thanks for being patient while we heard from Susie, Joe.
Hey, I love the Susie Orman show. I remember watching that particular show. I think she's great.
Joe is going to be joining Dennis and me this weekend in Las Vegas for the Dream Team Poker event. We talked to Daniel Delshad, the guy who ran it, a few weeks ago on this show. And I guess the three of us are going to make up a team, although none of us knows what the rules are.
Yeah, this will be a first time for it, but I'm kind of looking forward to it. Joe, Paul, and I on the same team. Okay. You can't even get a last longer bet out of this thing hardly or anything. My gosh. I don't know. But it should be some fun. Hey.
I don't think we've done our due diligence yet.
I don't even know what the format is either.
Or what the deal is at all.
Well, do you want to hear who some of the competitors will be?
Yeah, listen to this list.
Sure.
Listen to this.
There's one team made up of Phil Hellmuth, Mike the Mouth Matisau, and Jerry Buss, the owner of the L.A. Lakers.
Okay, which one's the strong one there?
Jerry.
Okay, go.
T.J. Cloutier, Tom McAvoy, and Kathy Liebert are making up a team of poker veterans. There's an all-women's team called Team Yo Mama with Dennis's friend Tiffany Michelle, Maria Ho, and Lacey Jones. And in fact, you're putting together an all-female team to go out there and play with us possibly,
Absolutely.
Right?
It looks like it's going to go on it. Lisa Parson, who finished 70-something in the World Series, was the second woman left standing on the thing, along with Mara Harris and Rachel Davis are going to go out there and form a team together.
Rachel was the one who was the highest-finishing woman in our free roll on poker tournament.
Absolutely. Very talented. That's going to be three interesting players, three talented players.
There are also going to be teams with Jamie Gold, Jerry Yang, Justin Bonomo, Hoyt Corkins, Todd Brunson, Paul Wasika, Joe Seabach, Scott Fishman, Christy Gazes, Amir Vahidi. Bunch of slackers, Joe.
Yeah, and then there's Joe McGowan. All right. You, me, and Paul, we're going to have some fun.
Hey, we'll be ready for him.
I'm already auto-mucking every hand for the first hour.
Hey, this thing has turned into something. I just got done talking to Daniel earlier today. They had expected or hoped to get 150 teams. He's had to go back to Caesars time and time and time again to get more tables.
Wow.
They are they've been sold out like three or four different times, and he's had to go back and plead for more room.
All right, let's the three of us make a promise to our listeners right now that next Tuesday here on the Lumiere Plays Final Table, we will honestly tell what happened to each of us and how this thing worked out for us, okay?
Okay, you got the word honestly.
I did put the word honestly in there.
We actually have to tell the truth. Oh, this could be bad.
I might run a little semi-bluff, maybe. You know, I don't know if I totally agree with you there.
All right.
Let's put Joe to work as the poker coach.
There we go.
And talk a little bit about a strategy that I don't think enough people talk about, and that is there are times when you're playing a hand, and maybe you won the hand by just betting, and somebody else threw their hand away, beaten you, and they've shown their hand, and the times when you should or should not show your own hand to the table. You got some thoughts on that, Joe?
Well, I think in general this is an easy one, because without a doubt, you know, at least 90%, you should never show. I mean, you just should never show your cards. I think of a lot of players that I've played with, and I've talked to people about this in the past. If you've played with people that show all the time and you've played with someone that shows once in a while, and then you have the guy that's never, ever seen his hand. You know the guys I'm talking about? You've played with people like that, right?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Well, you know, those guys, to me, they aggravate the heck out of you. You know, they always keep you guessing. I'd love to see what they had. You know, let me see one time. Let me see what you had. You know, let me make that flush. What? Yes. They always keep you guessing. And I think without a doubt, in general, that is by far the best strategy. You know, a couple things where it might show on occasion, and this will go back to perhaps last week or the week before, a little similar answer, different questions. To me, Paul and Dennis, would be if you're positive, you're going to gain more information and you're going to get more than what you're going to give. Sometimes I will show in my cash game. If I feel like people are just completely not paying attention and they just want to kind of see for fun and they really weren't paying attention, maybe I'll show if I feel like they may show me their hand later when I'm trying to do a confirmed tell on them. I think I might have something on them in the hand. I'll say, hey, I showed you earlier. You owe me one. And then they'll show me and, okay, I say, okay, great. You know, he did this, he did this. He was strong. Okay, let me kind of put that in my little poker journal, and I'll have this on this player for later. So that was really my thoughts, you know, quickly, of what I would think of. What do you think, Paul, and what do you think, Dennis?
Well, I'm along the same lines. What it is I call it added value. You never show a hand until you feel there is some added value in doing it. You want to entice the other player to show it to you. You want to show a play. You're sitting on the button, and you're making a standard 3x raise every time the button comes around here, and then you actually wake up to a hand of an ace-queen. You know, the guys in the small blind and big blind are looking at you like, you know, hey, what the heck's going on here? So, hey, you know, hey, I got an ace-queen. Here it is. Show it. Throw it away. Where you go. Next time it comes around, you have the deuce 7. You make the 3x. Yeah, I got a hand again. No problem.
Right, and that can particularly help you, I think, if you've been playing for a couple of hours and you've been making some moves here and there and taking down pots without showing cards that were not premium cards. And then after a couple hours, people are suspicious. Boy, this guy's raising a lot. This guy's taking a lot of the hands down.
Yep.
We never get to see what he has. Maybe he doesn't really have anything. That's the time where you've got aces or kings or queens and you take down a pot, and you definitely want to show them so you can go back to your strategy of perhaps putting moves on people with lesser cards later on, right?
The same thing I did in the World Series. I showed very, very few hands in the World Series, and I do agree with 100% with Joe. If you don't feel any kind of added value, if you're just starting out playing it, never show your hand. All you're doing is giving up information. You're not gaining it. But in the World Series, I did have one time where I showed the pocket aces. We're deep in it. I've got a great stack in front of me. I was trying to convince the table I'm only playing premium hands. If I'm in a hand, get the heck out.
Mm-hmm.
And small blinds, the big blinds, the antes, the pre-flop money out there was substantial. You love to steal a few of those. So, you know, convince the table that you're playing the nuts. They'll leave you alone, maybe.
Now, Joe, what about the etiquette of asking to see another player's hands? Let's say you're involved in a showdown with somebody else and he doesn't show his cards. How do you feel about saying, yeah, I'd like to see that hand?
Well, that gets into another topic, which, you know, there's a lot of poker rooms that have a rule of that for collusion, you know, where you can call up another player's hand if you think he and another player at the table. You know, it's like, okay, I'll raise, you re-raise, we'll get the third guy out. So on the river, you want to see that hand because you think they're each raising each other with nothing, just trying to put pressure to get you out, which hopefully is extremely rare. you know, in poker, but I'm sure it's happened. I personally haven't been aware of it. But I think, you know, when you ask to see the player's hand, that's the core reason is for collusion. But people take advantage of that rule, Paul. People in poker rooms, they'll say, you know, it goes check, check on the river, and the first guy shows you things, and the next guy mucks and says, I want to see that hand. Now, I think it's horrible etiquette. You never want to call off the losing hand. And, you know, the dealer should tap the cards in the muck, and it should be a dead hand. But if someone asks me, you know, hey, I want to see that hand, and if I roll it over and I mistakenly didn't realize I had a four-card flush, and now I win the pot, that pot's mine. It's still a live hand. I think that it's very, very bad etiquette to call up a losing hand. I mean, you're allowed technically to yell on someone's backswing in golf, but it's horrible etiquette, and you should never do it. And I really can't stand when people call up a losing hand. I just feel like give the guy a break. He just lost the pot, trying to muck his card. Just let it go. You know, that's my strong feeling on that one.
I think Dennis and I would both agree with you on that, Joe. Yep. All right, we'll see you this weekend at Caesars. We're looking forward to being in the Dream Team event with you, and we'll talk more about that and get some more poker tips from you next week.
Appreciate it, guys. Nice talking to you, as always.
All right, take care, Joe.
Now Joe goes back to his cash game and shows his cards all night.
Yeah, right. There you go. Okay, sure.
I'm kidding. Right. This portion of the show brought to you by Broadway Truck Centers.
Broadway Truck Centers have been working there for years. It's a business that's been in business for over 40 years at the same location. Any kind of service, parts, rental, body shop, makes no difference. If it concerns a truck, it concerns Broadway, and their number one thing is customer service. So if you have anything going on concerning your trucks, concerning your work, get down there and visit us. BroadwayTruck.com, 314-241-9140.
Paul Harris and Dennis Phillips in the Lumiere Place Poker Room. That's why we call it the Lumiere Place Final Table. We'll see you next Tuesday at 6 here on 5 Night of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.